All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. Yeah, and that's Decisions from Outer National. And we're going to have, this is a hell of a show we got for you today, because we're going to be concentrating on talking about some things that are extremely important in the world today that really, I mean, folks, when you're listening to this conversation, and hopefully you'll be taking part in it in terms of being able to think about it, bring it out to your friends, and maybe at some point we'll have these two people back on the show later to actually take phone calls and stuff. It's unfortunate we can't do it today. But I need to mention that at the back end of the show, we're going to hear an interview I did a while ago with Sivia Tamarkin, the director of Birthright, A War Story, a feature-length documentary that examines how women are being jailed, physically violated, and even put at risk of dying as a vicious anti-woman movement tightens its grip across America. This is especially relevant today as the fascist Trump-Pence regime implements its fascistic anti-woman program on many levels. And right now, I'm really pleased to welcome to the show today Coco Das, who's a contributing editor for Refuse Fascism, and Andy Z, who is a he's known by people on this show. He's known, and he always provides a sort of raucous aftermath in people's head because people are always, one, admiring his clarity, but at the same time, really wrestling with the kinds of things that he's challenging them with. And I think there's going to be a lot more of that on today. And both of these folks are in the Midwest right now. I think you're both in Chicago. Is that right? Coco, where are you?
Hi, Michael. It's good to be here. I'm actually in Texas, not in Chicago.
Oh, okay. There you go. Very important place to be right now. And Andy, you're in Chicago, right?
I'm in Chicago. We're in the same time zone.
Okay. All right. We got it. We're not worried about it. So at least, yeah, if neither one of you will be rushing off for a midnight snack or something, so we'll be fine. all right, well, let's jump into this, because there's a whole hell of a lot of people have been paying attention. Well, actually, you know, I think it's important that people understand, if you've been paying attention, this has been a week of terror against immigrants that, you know, have been described as ethnic cleansing of Latino immigrants and citizens. It's not a war in a certain sense. It's actually, Coco, I think you said this, it's an ethnic cleansing. And I think it's important for people to understand the character of what's happening all across the country, from the shootings to the, you know, to what happened with the raids in Mississippi, to what happened in Rhode Island, to what's going on in general. It's really important that people understand. I think that there's been actually not just a ratcheting up, but actually something that's like developing faster than many people thought. And Andy, let me ask you first, and then we'll move to Coco. What do you think about this?
Well, I was going to say, I wanted to hear what Coco had to say. This is not the only way Coco and I can talk on the radio show, but it would be, I was interested in what she had to say. But this last week, and then the last 2 weeks, the last month, the last 6 months, and the last 2 years have been, and should have, administered a shock to the people of this country. We are facing a fascist regime. The attack on the immigrants in the last week, you know, beginning with his tweets against the, you know, representatives, go back to where you came from, a classic racist, white supremacist trope, combined with the concentration camps on the border, 80,000 plus people in them, deaths on the border, including of, yes, babies, as we said during the Vietnam War, something what the U.S. did in My Lai and other places, and then followed by not one but two mass murders of people for being immigrants, and now, as you pointed out, seemingly an immigration guard or employee plowing into a group of courageous Never Again protesters in Rhode Island. So what all this should tell us is this is a very fraught time, and increasingly people are beginning to raise their heads again. And what I would like to get into is, what do we do about this, and why aren't people acting in the way? Now, Coco and I are both part of the editorial board of Refuse Fascism, and we do have a program to deal with this, which is a different kind of protest, is how we call it. We want to be talking with people on your show, and we're out in the world now talking to people about the need to organize now for the time when we can launch massive, sustained, nonviolent protests in the streets of cities and towns across the country. Protests that are going to continue. Maybe they'll start every week, Maybe they'll be day after day and don't stop. And this is an idea that's never been tried before, at least not since yesterday in Hong Kong, where it's ongoing, at least since the week before in Puerto Rico, the month before that in Sudan, a year and a half ago in South Korea. All over the world, people are taking to the streets in sustained protests to drive their governments from power. We could do the same here, but people aren't doing that. So we need to talk about that. And I, as just if I can go on just a bit, I'm here in Chicago not only working on the project of refused fascism, but also as part of a national tour to get organized for an actual revolution. And we're going out into the world and saying to people, you think you're woke, but you're sleepwalking through a nightmare of which the Trump-Pence regime is one part of it, but also it's the demonization, degradation, mass incarceration, genocide against black and brown people. It's the patriarchy and the attacks on women and LGBTQ people. It's the environment, devastation, possible elimination of even human life or life of many different species on the planet. It's the wars. It's the whole package of things that we say a system that's given rise to all of this and continually does that cannot be reformed, and we're trying to bring people forward into movement now to bring forward people, millions of people following the revolution, but actually thousands of people getting organized into it. And there, too, the same question is posed. What is it going to take for people in this country to stop sitting on their asses, frankly, with their heads up their asses in terms of what's really going on and confront the reality that exists, and then act accordingly, and that we need to have a big, big societal conversation and argument about working within the system versus working without outside the system, of revolution versus reform, in short. Now is the time when we've got to seriously be talking about taking to the streets, putting a lot of our lives on hold to be able to get out there and do what's necessary before this regime commits even greater crimes.
Coco, I wanted to talk to you about this because there's some of the stuff that actually is happening that's really, it's incredibly important. And you've actually done some stuff around this in a lot of ways. You know, look, a lot of people, I think that there's a lot of people who think, well, you know, maybe it's not as bad as everybody is, as you're saying it is, as people who seem to be in the know are saying that there's, you know, all kinds of people out there who are saying that, well, there's hundreds of thousands and even millions in the streets. You know, that why aren't there those hundreds of thousands and millions in the streets? And you know, there's a question of one of people seeing that it's important to actually that there's something actually real, not just important, but it's actually real. This is a real thing that people, that humanity is up against, and the take, the effort, and what's actually happening in relation to people coming forward on this, it's important to actually wrestle with that. And what is it? Where are people at? You know, we've had these mass killings. We've had all this other stuff. And where, you know, it's sort of like, where are the people running down the street saying, no more, we're not going to have it anymore? Let's jump into this a little bit.
Sure. I think there are a lot of illusions and delusions that people are still clinging to. I think one thing that's important is that people need to realize this is not a pendulum swing. This isn't going to be resolved in 2020 through the elections. First of all, Trump has, and others have hinted that he may not even step down if he loses the election. He may very well win the election. And, you know, there's also a whole regime and a whole fascist movement behind this that, you know, you would still have to contend with, that is still, you know, it's very much mobilizing and strengthening and preparing for something that will be a change in society and government for generations to come. They're not backing down. So the question for everyone is, if you don't want that kind of future, if you can't stand what happened, you know, lives being just cut down senselessly in El Paso, you can't stand seeing people crowded into these detention centers. You can't stand these concentration camps on the border, children dying in our name, you know, all of the demonization and attacks on immigrants. If you can't stand that, then you have to ask yourself, are you acting in a way that is commensurate with the danger that people are facing right now? And yes, long term, the stakes for humanity and the planet are very high. What will be the state of the planet by 2020? So people really need to let go of these illusions. The world as we know it has been torn asunder. That's in the Refuse Fascism Call to Action. And, you know, a part of confronting that reality is, you know, listening to the Michael Slate Show, going to refusefascism.org, and looking at the material that we have there. I tell people all the time, if you have an inkling that this is fascism or that something really dangerous is going on and you don't know how to talk about it, refusefascism.org will give you the tools. We have a lot of resources on there. You can also go to revcom.us. There's a lot on there about fascism. There's a talk by Bob Avakian that you've played before that really lays out how this has been building. It's a movement decades in the making, but now it's made a leap into the White House. And, you know, they're winning a lot of victories. They are accomplishing things, and it's extremely dangerous. And it's not okay. We have to get beyond the thumbs up. You know, we're glad you're out here. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And we have to get beyond, you know, just being angry about it. It's not enough to hate this regime. It's not enough to hate what's going on. You have to act. And there is a way to act. As Andy said, in South Korea, they've shown us. In Puerto Rico, they've shown us. They're showing us right now in Hong Kong, sustained, nonviolent, mass protests with a demand. And the demand is really important. I've been looking at these different examples for about a year now, and the demand that the regime has to go is decisive. If you make that demand from the start of these mass protests that do not stop until the demand is met, and the demand has to be that the regime must go, you can have a whole different political terrain in a matter of weeks.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I wanted to ask, and I guess actually, let me ask you again, okay, Coco, because I want to find this out a little bit more from you, and then Andy can step in too. You know, when you talk to people about this is fascism, you know, and the response, I mean, I've had the experience where people, you know, kind of say yes, 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 but then when you look at it, there's really a kind of, you know, not that much understanding about what fascism actually is, but also not that much understanding of how it actually is, one, becomes a major part of the system and actually is not like sort of a overthrowing of the system or the rulers of the system, but it's actually a part of that in terms of what it brings forward. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that. How do you actually, you know, when people say this, you know, and they might say like, look, man, when you're talking about fascism, aren't you just hyping it a little bit? Because after all, we still have elections. We still have, you know, the ability to go out into the streets. Although, again, people can these days point to things like what happened up in Rhode Island. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, fascism actually does come to power through most often. I don't know if there are any exceptions to this, actually, but it one of its features is that it comes to power through the normal democratic channels. I mean, there was nothing, like Hitler didn't come to power in Germany through a military coup. It was through the workings of the system. Donald Trump was elected, not by popular vote, but through the Electoral College. You know, it comes into power through the mechanisms of the system, but the important thing to know about fascism is that once it is in power, those norms are shredded. Those normal channels become eviscerated. The democratic rights, you know, what are supposed to be people's democratic rights are shredded. Group after group is demonized. And it's very difficult to vote out a fascist leader. I mean, we've been saying for a while, fascists can be voted into power, but they cannot be voted out. And, you know, if you disagree with that, find your evidence and show us. But, you know, there's historical evidence of this happening over and over again, and we need to learn from history. So it's important to understand that it comes to power, and then once it has all of the... Look, Trump himself said that he has the police, the military, and bikers for Trump on his side. And this is true now. And this is a fascist regime with its finger on the nuclear button. as far as, you know, still having some rights, you know, yes, we do still have the right to protest, technically. And there are a number of laws, a number of practices that are happening all over the country to actually suppress that right. I mean, right in L.A., 11 people are facing charges. Alex and Chantel just had a hung jury in their trial and are facing trial again, where the city attorney and the LAPD infiltrated a few fascism, and the city attorney is determined to prosecute these cases. And this is like a vengeful prosecution of protesters. This is happening all over the country. You know, in Rhode Island, you had a truck plow into protesters. But yes, we still do have this right, and we have to use it. There should be millions, hundreds of thousands, millions of people in the streets over this. So, you know, just going back to that question that Andy posed, we should go back to that and pose it again. Mm-hmm. We do want to hear from people, and, you know, we want people to confront what is keeping millions of people in this country from hitting the streets in a sustained nonviolent protest movement.
Mm-hmm. Andy, did you have something you want to add?
Well, I wanted to ask Coco two things. One is, I think, let's hear from some people saying what they think about what Coco just laid out. And Coco, do you have the digits for how people could call and or write to Refuse Fascism?
Yeah, if you would like to call in to Refuse Fascism or write in and tell us, you know, basically we're putting forward two questions in conversations and meetings in at different protests. We're asking, you know, is this not the time to call for sustained nonviolent mass protests to drive out the Trump-Pence regime, you know, in the between now and the fall? And why are there not these thousands and hundreds of thousands in the streets? What have you observed on that? So the number is 917-407-1286. And if you want to email us, the email address, info@refusefascism.org.
Okay, and let me just repeat that for people real quick, okay?
Yeah.
Because somebody actually called and requested for me to speak more slowly so that they could actually get the information. It's refusefascism.org. Phone number is 917-407-1286. All right? Okay, go ahead.
And the email address is info@refusefascism.org.
Okay. This is the Michael Slate Show, and we're speaking with Coco Das of RefuseFascism.org and Andy Z, also from RefuseFascism.org, as well as the National Revolution Tour.
So people, you know, it would be good for people to let us know what you're thinking about this conversation and the conversations on Michael's show. But look, I think Coco is getting at an important point. Whether you believe, as I do, that the what gave rise to the Trump-Pence regime is intrinsic in this system. It's one possible way a system of capitalism and imperialism can deal with the problem that they're facing, which is in moving away from what has been what we would call bourgeois democracy, the form of democracy that has existed here, which is principally democracy about how to maintain among the people who actually run this system. You don't get to vote on all kinds of questions that actually deeply concern people. You never got to really vote on the environment, as outrageous as it is that Trump has shredded the Paris Accord or pulled the U.S. out of it. At everybody who knows anything about climate science knows that was barely the beginning and with no teeth at all. You never got to really vote on anything like that, let alone the killing of people by the police, black and brown people around the country in disproportionate numbers. You never get to vote on that. But in other words, this shredding is a product of the system itself. So whether you believe, like I do, that this is intrinsic to the system and a one possible alternative a way that they can roll, or you believe that the system can be utilized, either it has been or it could be in the future, to meet the needs of the people and of justice, we need to get together and put aside differences to take to the streets. And in the streets, demanding the Trump-Pence regime must go, we can begin that one long argument between reform and revolution. But, Michael, I'd like to just go to a little bit, you know, a question of part of what I think is holding back is people's belief in the system and the fact that there is a whole ethos of individualism that is fed by the relative position in the U.S. There's an article that is on the website, revcom.us, and it's taken from a recent talk by the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. It's titled Individualism, the BEB, which stands for Bourgeois Electoral Bullshit, and the Illusion of Painless Progress. And in this article, he does make an argument here that I think would be challenging to, in two different ways, to many of the listeners. One is that he does take on a view, which I have heard on Pacifica in different cities, including when I was in Los Angeles, that, look, it's a system. These Democrats are no good. These Democrats are no good either. So there's what's the big deal about Trump? And you see this from often on The Intercept, from Glenn Greenwald and other people on that site. And Glenn, of course, people should defend him. He's under tremendous pressure for The Intercept in Brazil and their stand against the fascist government there. And Glenn has done lots of very good work. But on this, he's dead wrong. And then, of course, it gets absurd with people like Slavoj Žižek, who, you know, says, well, this is going to create a upset the apple cart, so that'll be good. You know, and Avakian goes into this in this article. But I think there is a sort of a little bit of a left position, you know, that they're all the same. And yet failing to actually draw the right conclusion, because at the same time, these same people will promote Bernie Sanders or the squad as the answer to work within the system and with the Democrats, objectively. And Avakian, a long time ago, made the point that if you think that you can make the Democrats what they are not, you'll end up becoming what they actually are. I may not have all the syntax exactly right, but the point is the Democratic Party is part of the problem, not the solution. And I think this is something that is holding back from taking the streets, because they are, exactly as Coco said, against all evidence, saying this is, frankly, any scientific evidence of looking at things really objectively, this is not just another swing of the pendulum. This is a qualitative change, and you could even see that in a classic way of fascism. Trump is going after the Democratic opposition in ways that are unprecedented, including lock her up, investigate them, split the security forces, all this kind of thing, purges of the security forces, all preparing for a more fascist or a fascist form of rule. And I think people have to answer a question here of, you waited on the Mueller report. You waited on the midterm elections. One, how did those work out, and what are the Democrats doing about this? And isn't it true that the Democrats are collaborating, the Democratic Party is collaborating with the regime in their support for and funding of the whole security apparatus on the border? And what makes you think, what argument do you have that the Democrats would actually redress this in the questions that Coco posed and we posed before? What evidence do you have that that's going to resolve this, and what is holding you back from acting consistent with a morality that it's not okay to let people live in concentration camps even for another 19 months or whatever it is till the election? That to tolerate that is a form of collaboration on yourself. And so people need to speak to this, and they can speak to us directly at refusefascism.org. But most of all, people should be checking out revcom.us and refusefascism.org and inviting people to come have that debate instead of trading a lot of, frankly, evasive things like, oh, it's a system, we don't have to take on the Trump regime, at the same time that they're promoting illusions of painless progress through these elections. You know, people have to look at the world squarely as it actually is and then act accordingly and actually get with the people who've been saying this for some time and attempting to organize it, which is refusefascism.org. It is refusefascism, who have been heavily attacked by the fascist regime, by the Trump, by the regime itself in indictments and all this, and by the fascist forces who have threatened the organization in various ways, including on the internet, especially heavily, but also coming out as Coco Face. Their 60 protesters were confronted by 250 fascists armed in a recent protest. So what, this question has to be posed to your listeners, and we need to have that discussion. Maybe Coco could even talk about some of what we've heard from people when we have posed this question over the last few weeks. Because it is serious. We are serious. We don't know if we can call for what we're calling for this fall, but we actually know that that's what's needed, and we want to talk to lots of people and lots of organizations. And I just have to say, and maybe we can get into this later, I'm adding another point in here. I don't want to overload things, but if your reason for not getting involved is anti-communism, it's because, well, I don't want to work with a group that promotes communism, let alone Baba Bacon, who thinks he's such a big deal, when actually you've never read anything he said or actually listened to any of his speeches, don't know what he's actually put forward, why it's called the new communism. I just would remind you of the quote from Pastor Niemöller: first they came for the communists, and then they came for everybody else. But you didn't act in the beginning. And it is true that right now, first they're coming for the immigrants, first the Muslims, now the on the border, but they're also coming for the communists, and there's ample evidence of that. But even more to the point, you need to look at why is it that Baba Bacon has given a speech on the Trump Pence regime? Why is it that it was revolutionaries who were part of, together with others, forming Refuse Fascism? What is it about that scientific analysis that was calling this fascism from the day of the election in 2016, when very few others were, and now there's beginning to be, oh, yeah, well, maybe it is. And I'm very glad that they are. But people need to look at that. The reason why is because there is a more scientific, objective way of looking at the world and not proceeding from what we wish to be true, but what actually is true.
Mm-hmm. Coco, let's jump into this with you a little bit more, because I think, one of the things that, you began talking about, and I think it's really important, Andy was referring to it as well, this point about we're actually looking now. And you guys are putting forward in conversations and meetings and out in the streets and all this stuff, and protests and all, the different aspects of the fascist program that we think there is not just the necessity, but the basis now to call for this program, for your program, for our program this fall. But to do so, there needs to be many more people and organizations who are ready to begin this. Then the question of how do we get there? Because this is a huge one, because people do. I mean, look, the more we sort of plod towards these elections, there's all these things where there's the right people righteously getting very angry at all the fascistic things that are going on. I mean, the stuff that happened down in Mississippi with all those undocumented workers down there and the children and the people being slaughtered in Texas, and then what happens with up in Rhode Island. These things are actually, you imagine what that's actually feeding into in terms of all these various Nazis who show what they're all about with Heather Heyer and the assault on all those people and way back then at that demonstration. This is a huge question for people. I think there's a lot of people who are scared of taking that leap, scared of taking that, even admitting that it might be something that could make a big difference here and that they should take it up. There's people who are looking for, they're sort of rooted in what they've learned all their life and hoping that this can do it. How do you wrestle with people around that?
I think the first thing is for people to see that there is no other way. This is the way that you are going to stop the Trump-Pence regime from destroying humanity and the planet. And, it's been a slow process, but there are more people now, more forces now, who are putting that forward. But Refuse Fascism actually has a plan and a strategy, and no group can do it alone, but if this is something that you are starting to understand, it's a way to stop this fascist regime and create a situation where, we're not constantly trying to outrun the regime and not trying to, we're not going to be able to rescue enough people. You actually have to knock the regime off the track. So, I mean, the first thing is to confront the reality. And then to, one thing that we're just having to do is, or we're, trying to get better at too, is inviting people to act on their conscience and and not allowing people to keep making excuses, because there is fear, and there are a lot of excuses. You know, one of the things that we hear is this, you know, South Korea is one thing, Puerto Rico is one thing, but the U.S. is so much bigger. There are so many cities. You can't do that here. Americans will never flood the streets. You know, that's one thing that we hear a lot. You know, I think it does, there's a lot of individualism, but then when it comes to actually taking individual responsibility, you know, there's a lot of excuses. So I think where we are trying to really have a lot of, we're inviting people to talk with us. We're inviting people to get into this strategy with us and really get into it deeply. And we'd like to meet with organizations. We'd like to just, we need to not ignore that there is a whole strategy and plan that can work. So it's a struggle. It's, you know, there's a term, I think, that comes from RevCom. Andy, you can correct me, but unity, struggle, unity, you know, we're in this constant process with people.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show. All right, go ahead, Andy.
No, I agree with Coco. It is a matter of, we are seeking to unite with people, and there should be struggle, and there should be unity, and it's, unfortunately, that's not so much the character of things now. People are way off into everybody get in your lane, everybody get in your box, and you can only speak about your people. Well, that actually is not a very good approach. Of course, people's voices that have been silenced by the workings of the system and need to be heard. But we actually have to understand that it is all of humanity that is affected right now, and that in terms of stopping this fascism in the United States, it's a matter of building very broad unity and then having that one long argument. But in terms of this first unity, I do think we have to pose to people who are involved in various projects, whether it's providing information about the climate or reproductive rights, getting out and protesting around reproductive rights or the climate or immigrant rights or against police brutality and police murder or against the wars. Why haven't you, most of the people running these organizations know about refuse fascism. Why haven't you invited refuse fascism? Because we are seeking to invite you to have a conversation, at least, about what it's going to take to stop this. And what is standing in the way of you of working together on this? And people bring their own programs in, everything else, you know, but what... And I would say that part of it, you know, is what Coco was talking about. There is this sort of allure of painless progress. We can, maybe the Democrats or the elections will take care of this, but that flies in the face of what's actually happening right now. The bodies that are actually, if they're not piling up in huge numbers, they are piling up. The lives being destroyed, the children whose lives are, and the border whose lives are forever going to be marred. These are things that you're willing to look past to have an easy way to deal with this. And yet, there is a group that's developed quite a bit of material on this, that people who actually are more objective, you know, and looking at what we've done, you know, the various scholars and whatnot have said, yeah, this is right. You know, and then often people say, but you can't say that. Well, when you're facing cancer, the last thing you want to hear is somebody tell you that the problem is your attitude. You want to actually talk to them about what is the cancer, what's the form of it, what is the remedy, and then get to work on getting that cancer out of your body. And there is a cancer on the world, which I would say is the capitalist imperialist system, and that we are working at to be able to unite people here and impact people around the world, that it needs to be overthrown. But it, as part of that, and the ground on which we actually are fighting, I and others are very committed to uniting very broadly with people on the need to get rid of this regime and to really push back this fascist movement. It's going to take a lot to completely uproot the soil of it. The soil is deep in the fabric of America. As Avakian has pointed out, there's a direct line between the Confederacy and what you see in the Trump-Pence regime. There's a direct line, and you can see that the very people who are out there in these fascist rallies chanting along with them, send them back, send, along with him, send them back, send them back. These are the same people who would have supported slavery. Some of them would have taken J-O-B-S, jobs, as slave catchers. This is, there's plenty of people out there now taking jobs as part of this, the apparatus that oppresses and imprisons and incarcerates people on the border and all around the country. So we need to, you know, people need to wake up to what's actually happening, but also they need to unite. But I don't think we, I mean, I will say this, there's plenty of things that mistakes we've made that we could look at, but we have never, in refused fascism, and certainly in the revolution, sought to not attempt to unite with people when what we're, when there's a basis to unite on what would be objectively in the interest of the people of the world. Now, we're not going to unite with things that actually are going to do harm to people. And so, and then we'll struggle with you about that, assuming that your intentions are for justice and for the people of the world. But we need a different process in society right now, and a different process of those who consider themselves progressive, where we're starting to come together to take care of the business that's in front of us, with the stakes being nothing less, actually, than the survival of the planet and humanity.
All right, and on that note, we're going to have to wrap this up. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. And we're going to have you back, both of you back, and we'll have a whole hour dedicated to this. I think we've gotten a lot, we've seen a lot of interest coming across, and we could have a really good, I think, hour-long conversation, but also bringing the people in, bringing listeners in.
Thanks, Michael.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Andy. Take care, you guys. Bye now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Coco Das, who is from Refuse Fascism, and she's a contributing editor to Refuse Fascism, and Andy Z, who is from the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. And we've been talking about what the hell is going on in this society right now and what needs to be done about it. And this is something that you're wrestling with. If you're listening to this show now, this is what you're wrestling with. So go to the websites they mentioned, send your thoughts to refusefascism.org, and tune in to The Michael Slate Show. We'll take a musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
What good is love and peace on earth when it's exclusive? Where's the truth in the written word? If no one reads it, a new day dawning comes without. Troubled times. We live in troubled times.
I recently saw a film called Birthright, A War Story, and it's a feature-length documentary that examines how women are being jailed, physically violated, and even put at risk of dying as a radical movement tightens its grip across America. And here to talk with us about her film is Sivia Tamarkin. And Sivia's film is, as I said, Birthright, A War Story. Sivia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sure. Let's jump into this. What compelled you to make this film? This is a different film than the category of films you're actually known for, right?
Well, I've always been interested in criminal justice issues, social justice issues. I covered wrongful convictions. I covered child abuse cases, child trafficking cases. So in terms of individual rights and abuses, it is not that different from the types of things I have covered. But what compelled me to do this was the Hobby Lobby decision in June of 2014, when the Supreme Court ruled that an individual employer could deny access to contraceptive coverage on employee health care insurance because of the owner's personal religious beliefs. That decision shocked me. I'm a 60s person. I was one of the hundreds of thousands of women who took to the streets in the late 60s, early 70s, to make sure that we had our privacy rights protected, and was elated with the passage of Roe v. Wade. So like so many other people, I had assumed that this was a given right and that it was no longer really an issue that had to be of primary concern. when I saw that contraception had suddenly become a type of, quote, abortifacient, as the opponents call it, that contraception was being aligned with abortion, I was just dumbfounded. I could not understand how this happened. I could not understand this encroachment on women's privacy, bodily autonomy. And so I set out to understand how we had reached the point of such erosion of individual rights. That became the catalyst.
Now, the thing is that, yes, there's the erosion of individual rights, but there's a very particular focus in this. You know, in particular, it's women. When you look at this and the assault on women, which has really struck me throughout the whole film, it's like you're watching all of these women and all of their experiences and what they're talking about. And it has you enraged and it has you, you know, teared up. But coming out of it, you come out of it with a fairly deep and pressing understanding of there's something really wrong here. And I wanted to ask you about this because the title of your film isn't just Birthright. It's actually the second half, too, A War Story. Let's talk about that.
I think that from the moment the Roe v. Wade decision came down, there was a declaration of war on the part of the opposition. And there has been for the past 40 plus years an insidious erosion of all these rights. And it has been a battle strategy. Both sides will call it a war. And the decision has been embattled from the onset, and very cleverly, very strategically, the opposition began to map out a plan. They infiltrated the Republican Party. They formed alliances. They formed agreements. I mean, in many cases, strange bedfellow pacts, if you will. I mean, it is quite unusual to see the religious right supporting Donald Trump. But nevertheless, they strategized toward their objective. They groomed a youth corps of foot soldiers. From the onset, there was a plan of erosion, of invasion. There's no question that it is a war. It has been a declaration of war, and they are convinced that they are certainly winning.
You know, one of the things that was really grabbed me was actually that the process of making the film also illustrated exactly that point, that it is a war story, that there are elements of this war against women in there, very much so. What did it take to actually be able to make this film?
It was very difficult to get people to go on camera because there has been such fear. On the part of women, there has been such a stigmatization of abortion, even in many cases of the use of contraception, depending upon their religious community. But what is very clear is starting in the late 70s, going through the 80s, this has been a domestic terrorist attack. We've had physician providers murdered. We've had clinic bombings. We have had death threats. They're continuing. In fact, I had read a recent report that since Donald Trump took office, 7 months ago, that the attacks and threats have increased exponentially. So it was very difficult to get women who have been victimized on camera because they're embarrassed and afraid of repercussions within their community. But more significantly, it was difficult to get providers and clinicians to go on camera because they were afraid of being ostracized. They were afraid that it might harm their professional affiliations with hospitals, professional affiliations within their community. So that was very, very much a challenge because so many people feel beleaguered.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said also that you began the film as a project that was looking into women's rights, and you were referring to that earlier on as we spoke, but that you also found out through the course of digging into this that far more was involved and at stake in this battle than you originally thought. Let's talk about what you found out.
What was so surprising is that, as we call it, the collateral damage, the fallout from this war on abortion, that the same rhetoric, the same ideology, the same principles of protecting the unborn and giving the fetus constitutional rights has created a ripple effect that ensnares women who may, in fact, be on the opposite side of the argument. what you are finding is in an effort to establish the personhood and the constitutional protections of the fetus, that laws designed to protect children are being misapplied and being turned against pregnant women. So pregnant women, for example, are being criminalized for behavior that people in the state, in the county, in municipal authorities may deem inappropriate. We're finding that with the rise of Catholic health care and the takeover of insolvent private and public community hospitals, 1 in 6 beds in acute care facilities is now owned or affiliated with Catholic health care. The problem there is that the medical treatment is not evidence-based, but it is based upon religious doctrine. So there are situations where a physician is on the phone with a bishop. We are finding that the ripple effect continues into the birthing process as well. So women who are carrying a much-wanted pregnancy and want to give birth in a manner that they choose, whether it is natural childbirth or home birth, find themselves being controlled by the courts because doctors, hospitals have gone to court to claim guardianship of the unborn fetus and force a woman to have a cesarean section or force a woman to be on bed rest. There's a case I recently heard about, which unfortunately we don't have in the film because it just surfaced in the courts. But it's a woman in Washington who had a stillbirth, and she's now being charged criminally because they are claiming she did not get the proper prenatal care.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with filmmaker Sivia Tamarkin about her brand new film, Birthright, A War Story. When you go through this, I can't help but think, you know, there's a couple places in the film and in some of the stuff that you've written about it. At one point, there was a comparison of abortion rights, a battle for abortion rights to the Civil War. And that what I kept thinking about, and there's also references to what's become a very popular reference these days, given the television show, but also even before that when the book was out there and people who had any conscience were actually trying to devour this book and spread it around, The Handmaid's Tale. There's really something that jumps out at people if you're at all sentient and at all understand what the hell is going on. This idea of women having no control of their body equals slavery. This is a very heavy thing to understand because it really is actually grabbing the humanity of women and saying, to hell with it. You are not second-rate citizen. You are not human. To me, it's just unfathomable and unacceptable.
Well, the goal here was to present the issue as a human rights violation here. I think that over the past 4 decades or so, everyone has been so fixated on the singular medical procedure of abortion, and it has obscured the larger issue that what we are talking about is a woman's right to bodily integrity, bodily autonomy, and human rights. If these kind of violations were being headlined as occurring in other countries, there would be outrage. We talk about female genital mutilation. We talk about Sharia law. We talk about all the restrictions on women. And yet, American women have to realize that they are in dangerous territory here, that it is happening here. And it's interesting, the comparison to Handmaid's Tale, it was just coincidental, of course, that the timing of the series came out right before our film release. But I had always viewed this as The Handmaid's Tale. I read the book back in the 80s when it first came out. Mm-hmm. In fact, we had considered putting a clip from, I think it's 1995 or so, movie with Natasha Richardson in the film, but the cost was prohibitive to use the clip. So I had always seen this. The bottom line, of course, is that you have a radical religious movement that is attempting to blur the line between church and state and govern as a theocracy and impose religious doctrine. You have a government that would like to ban contraception and ban abortion. So de facto, the government is forcing women to become breeders, just as the premise in this dystopian novel, The Handmaid's Tale.
That point, exactly that point. The woman does not have control over her body. She has been, in fact, reduced to a slave de facto. I mean, it's sort of, this is what's happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Those who are opposed to abortion will point out, and, you know, their criticism of this is that, of course, women are leading the anti-abortion movement. The head of the National Right to Life, Carol Tobias, and the founder and former executive director of Americans United for Life, Charmaine Yost, who now happens to be a deputy under Tom Price in the Department of Health and Human Services. So that shows you how the infiltration and co-op of the government agencies is taking place. But they'll say that women are leading the movement and claim it is certainly not the enslavement of women. They claim that the only harm against women is against female fetuses.
And actually, that's the point, even when you talk about this fetus first policy. Ironically, the fetus has full standing as a human being while the woman is denigrated down to less than human. And it's just, it's so enraging. One of the things when you point out that I think it's important for people to understand is in the film, you actually show a series of women who have gone through horrendous things that actually illustrate what happens when you have no control over your own body in relation to health and that kind of health care that you need and all this. You have women who have been sent to jail, who have been put up on charges, who have, I mean, just horrendous things happening to these women. And it's all being done, to a certain extent, under a blanket that keeps it silent and unseen.
Yes, and it is all part of a strategy to create a body of jurisprudence, enough laws to establish the personhood of the fetus. Because there are some factions within the anti-abortion movement that say, we don't have to worry about overturning Roe v. Wade. If we can establish the personhood of the fetus, then any harm that comes to that fetus can be prosecuted under criminal statutes, like homicide. So it certainly does put the autonomy and bodily integrity of a woman in second place. It's a very simple premise. You cannot have two constitutionally protected beings within one body. And therefore, according to the ideology of the opposition movement here, women are the ones who are going to suffer. What's so interesting is there is no other instance in the law, certainly, in which an individual can be forced to undergo medical procedures, can be forced to have any external influence on their bodily organs. There's case law where you cannot be forced to become a donor. You cannot be forced to have an arm or leg or any part of your body surgically removed. But yet, all of this case law seems to disappear when we're talking about a woman's reproductive organ.
Yeah, absolutely. Which again comes down to, it's an establishment of, or it's an assertion that a woman's body is not hers. It's not her body, and that the fetus actually,
exactly.
Yeah, and that the fetus is actually more important than the woman's body, and not a part of the woman's body, but something that's actually existent with a sort of blessed being of its own or something. It's just, when you put together all of the medieval religious beliefs and everything else that go on in here, with the standards since for so long, the oppression of women, it really sharpens things up to just a red-hot degree. And I wanted to ask you one last question around this. You've talked a lot about, as you go through the film, there's also a point where you've talked about that when you come out of this, standing before you, and there's so much more to talk about, I should say, there's like people will see this film, they'll see young women talking about basically, actually shockingly, how little they actually know about the fight for abortion rights and why that's important and what it actually even means. But you're in this kind of society where women's bodies are being stolen from them and the oppression is intense and immense. And there's very little knowledge broadly among younger people, young women who may know that there's abortions, but don't have any idea about any of the fight to get there or what's happened. And there's also, though, you talk about in the midst of all that, there's a real need to and a beginning to do this, but the fight for not just the right to an abortion, but for reproductive justice. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. I think that we're talking about generations here who have had the benefit of the legality of abortion and full access to contraception. And so when one has a right, you do not assume it's going to be taken away, particularly when it's a constitutionally validated and codified right by the courts. So in fairness to many of the younger women, they assumed this was a given. It was something that they were entitled to, could access, and the vigilance was dropped. People were caught off guard, and it slowly, slowly was nibbled away. It's not taught in school very infrequently, unless you're taking a particular women's studies course. Sex education is now being controlled by the radical religious right, so that in many school districts, abstinence only is taught. So there was no reason for a younger generation to see that they were losing this right. And when the Republicans mobilized, particularly in it's a backlash against Barack Obama in 2010, it took everybody by storm, and the religious right has secured their foothold in these state legislatures. Now, the problem is that I think what we've learned is that words like choice have minimized the impact of what we're talking about. You know, choice has become a cavalier word, a word that has a rather cavalier connotation. We all make choices every day in the course of our lives. The issue is certainly one of reproductive justice. And reproductive justice precludes the states and the legislatures from determining whether or not, when, how you will give birth, but it's far more encompassing. It involves a woman's right to bodily autonomy. It involves a woman's medical decision-making. It involves her own right to determine whether she will have children. But beyond that, very much the right to economic accessibility and mobility, the right to raise the children that she has in a safe environment. So reproductive justice goes far beyond just the issue of abortion. It makes reproductive rights a human right, and that's what we had hoped this film will show. We're not talking about a singular medical procedure, but women's human rights that are being assaulted in the United States of America.
Absolutely, and very important. The right of women to actually live as fully functioning human beings. And Sivia, I want to thank you very much for the film and for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
That brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and my engineer, Kiana Williams. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.